This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the International Bardo Museum of Tunis. I am Amakujo, Director of Curations. We are proud to present this audio cassette guide of Unfinished Nightmares, the new sketches of Claudia Atieno. These drawings were discovered 2 years ago in a previously unknown crawl space below Atieno's Cornwall home. This audio guide will be narrated by historian and expert in Atieno's oeuvre, Roimata Mangakahia. While Atieno's whereabouts remain a mystery, these sketches give eerie insight into her last creative thoughts before her disappearance. This special exhibit is located on level 2. Works with audio guidance are numbered and begin on your left, moving counterclockwise around the room. Each narration will be followed by a tone so that you may pause the cassette between pieces. Please return the cassette player, headphones, and shoulder strap to the member services desk on the ground floor.
Sketch 1. Untitled figure with hat. This drawing is of the Society's Secretary of Trade, Vishwati Ramadoth, wearing a wide-brimmed fedora. You can see a wry smile on Ramadoth's face, like in reference to the brown western hat juxtaposed against her soft blue sari. The staff of the Bardo disagreed with my identification of Ramados. Rather, they do not believe the figure is meant to be anyone in particular, but I know her face well. Ramados was a frequent visitor to Atieno's Cornwall home, as well as her Mwanza apartment. I knew Ramados, and while I was not close to her, I knew she greatly respected Atieno's artistic talents. Ramados also greatly resented Atieno's constant critique of the Societal Council, her frequent jibes about Ramados's capitulation to bureaucratic strictures. Ramados, like most of Atieno's invited guests, was an avid art collector and ardent fan of Atieno's work. Ramados had a technically perfect smile, one that is vibrant and beautiful, regardless of her intentions. Look at her smile in this sketch. What are Ramados's intentions? What are your intentions? One of Atieno's most notorious paintings, Ferngorch Madurai, currently part of Manhattan Museum of Modern Art's permanent collection, featured a verdant ravine covered in ferns. In the centre of the gully, a single camera held by two seemingly disembodied hands, literally suggesting a nature photographer, but figuratively critical of the council's surveillance scandal of 1958, where staff members, under the oversight of the Trade Commission, kept secret and extensive records of international merchants, including artists such as Atieno. Placing the subject of the painting in Ramados's birthplace of Madurai was a particularly harsh jab at a powerful and, it has been rumoured, vindictive woman. The surveillance records were unearthed by four journalists from Vancouver, but they could not prove Ramados directly authorised the surveillance of these merchants. Ramados was publicly censured for this direct violation of the Citizen Espionage Act of 1951, but never faced a tribunal for these crimes. In Untitled Figure with Hat, Atieno did not detail much of Ramados's surroundings, just her face, smile, hat, and shaded eyes. But notice the pencil stroke in the upper left, suggesting the flat horizon of the ocean. I believe this was drawn on the patio of Atieno's Cornwall home, overlooking the sea. Ramados's contagious charms are made vivid in this drawing, and were likely her salvation in the congressional hearings on her scandal. Ramados was friendly with Atieno for the most part, and they had lively conversations about everything except politics. But in the time I spent with Ramados in Cornwall, I sensed she was always planning every word, every gesture. She was carefully choreographed. Her intentions were complex and hidden. Sketch 2. Untitled automobile with driver. Scholars at the Royal Cornwall Museum noted that it was a 1950 Rolls-Royce Silver Wraith, a vehicle which was owned by late President of the Bank of Western Europe, Archie Macpherson. In the sketch, however, the man standing next to the vehicle is not Archie, who was a large man, broad-shouldered and tall, with a round belly and young face. The man in the sketch is small, barely taller than the vehicle itself. He is wearing thick-rimmed eyeglasses and wearing an unbuttoned shirt. Look carefully inside his jacket. There appears to be a pistol on a shoulder holster. Although this is a small debate among critics. Notice the shape. The handle of the supposed gun is longer than seems ordinary for a pistol. How long is a pistol? This man also does not bear any of the uniform elements common to the international police, who were the only people legally allowed to carry firearms. So either it is not a pistol, perhaps an unfinished umbrella, or poorly drawn driver's gloves. Or this unknown man is a private guard come driver for a wealthy non-political individual such as Macpherson. Look in the windows of the car. Do you see the outline of a heavy-set banker? What does wealth look like? Hiring armed private guards would also be a criminal offence, but one which money or influence could help alleviate. Macpherson owned a large collection of private works by Atieno, Pavel Zubov and Cassandra Reza. He underwrote an exhibit of Atieno's work at the Tate Modern in 1971. He was one of Claudia's supporters in her critique of the new society. Macpherson believed Ramados and other high-ranking members of the society were covertly constructing an institute in the former United States to imprison violators, the Family Dissolution Act of 1955. He claimed the institute kidnapped and tortured adults who sought to reconnect with their birth families. Archie and Claudia did not just enjoy sharing conspiracy theories, they actively believed them. Macpherson was found dead outside his home last year. The official statement claimed he died of a heart attack. And this is not an appropriate forum for speculating about the honesty of official statements. Look again in the windows of the car in the sketch. Who else was in the vehicle? Do you see yourself inside the car? Sketch 3. Untitled waves. Atieno had drawn a cross-section of waves crashing upon a rocky shore. Look closely along the top of the water. She has masterfully depicted the turbulent force of sand and seaweed caught in an undertow using only a pencil. She has coloured darkly the sky, ostensibly just bad weather, but also symbolising the nightmare of being dragged out alone into the ocean. The markings are boldest near the rocks. Look at the rocks and follow the lines out into the sea. See how the pressure of the pencil lightens significantly. The charcoal sky dissipates not into light, but into nothingness. The fear of the void. Of loneliness. The cliffs of the Cornwall home were always my favourite scene to sketch. Sitting on Claudia's patio deck, overlooking the cliffs, I would often practice shading gradients. Claudia asked me once why I drew this scene so often. I explained to her it was a relaxing way to pass the time, particularly when I needed to keep busy but lacked motivation to create new work. It wasn't long after that before her sketch pad was filled with drawings of the same scene. You can see here, in untitled waves, that even with pencils, Atiano was masterful. I hated her for that. I hated that about her. Look again at her gradients. Don't they make you mad? Think about everything you are incapable of achieving.
Tired of walking around shirtless because you don't have a single upper body article of clothing that expresses your intense love of the immersive fiction podcast Within the Wires? Are you having to scrawl the words Within the Wires on your chest with a faded Sharpie you found at the bottom of your backpack one day, but it's hard to write upside down so the letters are mostly illegible and you misspelled wires as Ryas? Do you find that damselfly logo hard to draw, especially on skin? Well, stop that. Actually, don't stop that. I think it's pretty cool you went through so much trouble to show your love of our show. Thank you. But I personally, just me, find t-shirts much more convenient for that sort of thing. And we have brand new Within the Wires shirts in our store. The incomparable Emily Tatt designed a damselfly shirt that glows in the damn dark. And the impeccable Dave Watt created a Season 3 dictaphone recording device shirt that looks like a cool retro film poster. Plus, we have Rob Wilson's classic Within the Wires logo shirt and his Season 2 museum shirts, which are
arty as hell.
Maybe you're also tired of the walls in your home or dorm or office being shirtless as well, and you want to cover them up. Come on, walls. I have friends coming over. Try to look decent. Well, you can buy your walls some posters, like the Within the Wires logo or Jessica Hayworth's stunning rendition of Claudia Atieno's Child with Damselfly, as featured in Season 2. It's a real art print. It's classier than all get out. You can get shirts and posters at withinthewires.com and then click on shirts and posters. That's a lot of complicated steps, so I recommend writing them down on your arm using that old Sharpie. Again, withinthewires.com, click on shirts and posters.
Sketch 4. Untitled Dinner Party. Dinner parties were common at the Cornwall House, with visiting artists and dignitaries. I say dinner parties, but due in part to the remoteness of the house and in part to the untamed nature of parties, they ran through the night and into the next day, when people could more safely make their way back to land. On occasion, the parties bled through to the next day and further. Atieno was well known for her social events, and many of these were wild engagements with drinks, music, dancing, and gregarious, unpredictable personalities who sang or told stories. Or in the case of several dancer friends, stripped naked and performed improvised routines on tables. In this drawing, though, the party seems subdued. Look at how the well-dressed figures gingerly hold their glasses of wine, standing stiffly about cocktail tables, with little sign of the debauchery I associate with Atieno's get-togethers. It is difficult here to discern specific identities, but it is likely that these are representatives from the council. I believe Atieno was attempting to capture the council's trepidation about what they had interpreted as political art. I am not so sure of this interpretation, especially given the source. If you're looking for dissidents, you're likely to see it, whether or not it's really there. She welcomed friends and enemies alike, and in the case of World Council and architects of the new society, she would have happily invited any of her well-appointed detractors into her home, as long as they told good stories and didn't ruin the fun. The council was happy to attend the parties, as long as they could mentally note who was there and what they said. Atieno's home country of Tanzania was dissipated during the creation of the society in 1939. The founders of the society removed national borders in favour of the 9 united regions. While this gave way to an Eastern Africa independent of English imperialist rule, it stole away the agency of the smaller Tanzanian officials fighting for their own governance. The sub-capital of Dodoma now reports to the regional seat in Nairobi. Europeans no longer governed the former Tanzania, but the open trade enabled astronomic growth in several regions of Africa, and the European population grew there in two decades following the war. Atieno felt disconnected from her homeland and her family in Mwanza, as well as with the dilution of the Igbo population by the English-speaking Europeans. Still, as a globe-travelling artist, many of her childhood friends disassociated from Atieno, feeling she had abandoned her home. Perhaps she had. It would not be the only time she had abandoned a home. In Untitled Dinner Party, we likely see a room full of politicians watching and recording Atieno subtly, as Atieno subtly watched and recorded them in return, in her own way. Look at the revelers in the sketch. Or is revelers an appropriate word to use? Which of these people do you think last saw Claudia? Sketch 5. Untitled Artists at Work. This meta-sketch of a sketch is quite indicative of the occasions when guests would work together to develop new work. Someone would paint, as you see here in this sketch, a painting on an easel, three artists gathered around discussing the work. I used to believe that one of the figures was Claudia herself, as the painting on the easel, the art within the art, appears to be her, and appears to be her work, Sunshine Afternoon. But Sunshine Afternoon was painted in 1968. This sketch, while not dated, is likely from the early 1960s, if not late 1950s. This painting is someone else's entirely. It was not uncommon for artists who worked together to share ideas and paint similar concepts, but an oft-had discussion with other artists in Atieno's circle was, when does inspiration become theft? I have no proof that another artist originally created Sunshine Afternoon. In fact, Claudia might have created it first in this sketch, only to realise it fully in oils years later. But one of the artists in this work, so you see the woman with the long dark hair, I'm certain is Vanessa Wynne. The more I think about her signature rays of light, I think that Sunshine Afternoon was certainly her original idea, or at least I have my suspicions. Look at the sketch in the sketch. Do you recognise that as an early study of Sunshine Afternoon? Does this serve as proof of anything? Are all affirmatives true until they are successfully debunked? Sketch 6. Untitled Rope and Parrot. This, of all the newly discovered sketches, disturbs me the most. As a sketch, it is simple and beautiful. It is the least suggestive of sinister guests. As you can see, it is just a square knot lying atop a wooden table. Next to the rope is a bird. The curators at the Bardo have called this bird a parrot, but it is specifically a care. Note its long, narrow beak. I argued with the curatorial staff about this, and they noted it was more likely an African grey parrot, a bird Atieno would have seen in her travels, as opposed to a care, native to New Zealand, a place she had never been. I know this bird to be a care, even though Atieno would never have seen one in person. First, the bird is missing the patterns of the grey parrot, but there is a more significant reason for my certainty. Second, I had an identical painting, a care on a table, next to a knotted rope. It was one of my earlier attempts to capture wildlife stills. I was fortunate enough to have a friend who worked in nature conservation in the South Island, specifically in maintaining the health of native birds. She'd taken in an injured care. She had nursed it back to health, but it could no longer fly. I remember clearly the bird had a small plaster wrap, almost like a cast, at the base of one of its wings. My friend allowed me to paint the immobilized bird, and it was a good subject, as it held perfectly still. Notice in Atieno's sketch the shoulder area on the bird's left side. Do you see where the pencils are absent in a horizontal swathe? Is that an unfinished section, or merely Atieno playing with light and shadow? Or is it a plaster band? I brought the painting with me to London early in my career, hoping to get a showing in a gallery. At the time, I thought it captured a unique perspective and approach to still lives. But over time, I began to feel the painting was not satisfactorily executed. So I left it with other early studies and incomplete paintings in a trunk in my closet. Atieno rarely came to see me in my small flat in Plymouth because it was so far from her home. For all of her love of world travels, she detested long commutes to others' homes. Plus, as I said, it was a small flat. But a few weeks after her last visit to my flat in 1970, I noticed that my trunk was open and a handful of my paintings and drawings were missing. Since I did not check the trunk regularly, I thought it had perhaps broken open in transit and I'd just never noticed. But upon seeing these sketches this year, I recognised this sketch of the bird and the rope, and I suspect Atieno had found my old painting. She not only stole the picture, but bettered it. Even without the richness of colour and the depth of oil on canvas, Atieno captures shadows and light so well, even the care, without the motion blur of a realistic photograph. Atieno, using only a pencil, shows the bird's lack of attention span, its nervous energy sitting next to a human. Even the chips and dents along the table's edge where the bird had bit away the wood. I don't recall ever including that detail in my original painting. What is most maddening about Atieno is her talent. Even in plagiarism, she makes it perfectly her own. So this concludes your audio tour of Unfinished Nightmares, the new sketches of Claudia Atieno. Before you turn in your cassette player to the member's desk, I'd like to say a word about Claudia's absence. She may never return to us, but I believe she's not dead. Just as she left her home in Mwanza, she left her home in Cornwall. Perhaps she will continue to make art, and we will find her once again. Her former partner, Pavel Zubov, told the staff at Bardo Museum that he found the sketches for this exhibit in a crawl space in Claudia's home. I'm not certain what he was doing in her home recently, but I'm wary of the idea that he simply found these in one place. No one had ever looked. I admit to looking thoroughly through her home when she wasn't there. I never saw these. I'm hoping his claims are false, and that Claudia gave them to him to put in the Bardo. It's possible she simply doesn't want it known that she's still somewhere in the world making art. I expect more exhibits of newly discovered works by Claudia Atieno. I hope, anyway.
Within the Wires is written by Jeffrey Craner and Janina Mathewson and performed by Rima Tewiata, with original music by Mary Epworth. Find more of Mary's music at maryepworth.com. The voice of Amaku Joe was Felicity Krenzel. Within the Wires is a production of Night Vale Presents. Okay, our time is done. It's you time now. Time to stop by the museum gift shop, grab yourself a souvenir book of paintings about
ketchup stains,
pick up a poster featuring
a graphic depiction of your birth,
and buy a commemorative vase made out of
wind.
Hello, iPod broadcast listeners. My name is Meg, and I am one of the esteemed tri-hosts of the beloved iBroad Good Morning Night Vale. I, along with my hilarious friends, fellow Night Vale actors, passionate eaters, and soft-hitting journalists, Symphony Sanders and Hal Lublin, are now over 100 episodes into our deep dive recap show of Welcome to Night Vale. We've tackled topics like soft meat crown headcanons, Cecil's fashion, and whether Steve's scones were really all that terrible, plus behind-the-scenes stories from the Night Vale creative family. And we've heard from listeners like you about queer representation, Night Vale named pets, major theories, minor questions, and of course, best and worst practices for alternative spa therapy services. If you know, you know. Check out Good Morning Night Vale every other Thursday, wherever you get your eyebrows, eyecasts, pod broads, and podcasts. I think I like pod broads the best. I'm a real pod broad myself.